It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it is after another Cowboys loss. This one more stunning than losing to the Saints on the road or the Packers at home. This is to a lowly Jets team. Came into the game at 0-4, and Cowboys lose this thing 24-22. Ed, I'll get right to you. Ed Werder, of course, joining us. He is in Green Bay preparing to see a couple of real teams. This is just an utter embarrassment. Ed coming to us from just right there in the shadows of, what do you call that place, La Pierre or whatever, Appleton, all those areas.
But it's the shadows of historic Lambeau Field.
The shadows of historic Lambeau. Ed, you got there though in time to observe this whole thing, and so many different facets to get into. But let's begin. There is tremendous, and you saw it on Twitter. People are like, cannot wait to hear Doomsday. Well, we love to be here for y'all, and we will we'll always be there, and we're going to give you our honest thoughts and opinions along the way. We'll break this game down. But, Ed, they want our people, a lot of them, want Jason Garrett's head on a platter. We talked about, just kind of in passing a little bit, in a possible in-season firing a couple of weeks ago. Actually, last week we mentioned it, and both of us probably still think it's highly unlikely. It became a tiny bit more likely with this 3-3 start. Ed, you've seen some embarrassing Cowboys losses over the year, and we also know there's some players out, but still, going to a place where they're 0-4, they have no shot. Darnold does come back this week. How surprised are you by this outcome?
Well, when you get to play the Saints without Drew Brees and then the Packers without Devontae Adams, you probably deserve to be the first team since the season opener to play the Jets with Sam Darnold at quarterback, first of all. And, hey, this whole league is about, you know, overcome adversity and winning despite the attrition of your roster. And, you know, we know the Cowboys have a lot of talent, and today was a test of their depth and their character, and ultimately they failed. And I understand, but people are outraged at Jason Garrett and frustrated by the fact that it appears that Jerry Jones has no intention whatsoever of firing Jason Garrett, even though he's been present for the demise and the end of every coaching regime throughout the course of Cowboys history, from Tom Landry to Jimmy Johnson to Bill Parcells to Chan Gailey and Wade Phillips, and Wade Phillips is the only one he's ever fired during the season. And he did that because the team quit on Wade Phillips in a very obvious way. When I look at that game today, I did not see a team that quit on Jason Garrett. In fact, I saw just the opposite from Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott in particular in the fourth quarter. Now, it was interesting that late in that fourth quarter, when they're down 8, you know, Garrett's his, you know, usual reassuring, encouraging self. And as he holds out his hands and applauds players as they're coming off the field after a disappointing moment, none of them exchange hand slaps with him. It's like almost like they're rebuking him and saying, we're beyond this. This is not a good thing. Don't try to reassure me. Don't try to encourage me. That's not what I need at the moment.
I believe it was after 24-16. It was after they made it 24-16, and they're all coming off the field.
It was an 8-point game. Yes, an 8-point game. But, you know, you go back and you look at this, you know, on a day where you know points are going to be difficult because you're without both your tackles, you lose Amari Cooper, you don't have Randall Cobb. You know, the Cowboys cost themselves 14 points with poor strategic decisions, penalties, and just outright failure. I mean, Garrett's decision to pass up a short field goal at 7-3. Dak gets stopped on 4th-and-2. They lose 3 points there. Malik Collins draws a penalty on 3rd down for a horse collar tackle, turns a field goal into a touchdown. That's 4 points. The offensive pass interference on Cedric Wilson nullifies a Dak touchdown pass to Witten. Cowboys get a field goal on that possession. That's 4 points. And then the most obvious, Brett Maher missing a 40-yard field goal attempt. That's 3 more points. If any one of those things does not happen, the Cowboys theoretically win the game. But when all 4 of them happen, you have the result that we wound up with at the Meadowlands, a 2-point loss.
And in every shot of Garrett, I mean, I think that's why it's not so much about what Garrett is or isn't doing. And by the way, you know, Romo, I think Romo, I thought he seemed to be in a pretty good mood today when all this was going down. And he kept sort of catching himself and talking about how, you know, oh, Dak's good too. Dak's like Darnold in that how he plays. He can raise the level of his teammates. And he would kind of do this. But, boy, there are some things out on Twitter that we'll get to. Dez, T.O., there are some people that are jumping. You talk about jumping on a man while he's down. It is happening to Jason Garrett, and he brings some of it on himself. I think the reason the fan base is so sick of this guy is because it continues to be, now they have this play caller, that this young player caller, Kellen Moore, and of course we've celebrated him for the first three games, but you see the head coach, you see Garrett, and he just, throughout the game, he doesn't really seem to be doing much over there. He just kind of has that same look. And CBS had the game. They wanted this national game. Give us the Cowboys, even though they're playing a winless team. Well, they know what they're doing because the Cowboys and Jets, this thing ends up being was interesting game at the end. But Cowboys always bring ratings, no matter if they're good, bad, or just sort of embarrassing. Now, what you said is all true about them losing several players along the way. Left tackle's out to start, right tackle's out to start. They lose Amari Cooper right away. Randall Cobb wasn't at the game. And then, by the way, let's start with this. Okay, because we got a lot of things to talk about. They have a new rule in the NFL, okay? It happened because of what happened in the NFC title game. You can challenge pass interference. Well, now Tony was all over this play. Tony was all over this play, and he got back up by Sterator. Tony says on that pick play, they called offensive pass interference on Cedric Wilson. Poor Cedric Wilson goes. And maybe it was his intent to pick the cornerback off or to pick the defensive back. But the defensive back takes him on. The defensive back basically comes at him and sort of takes himself out of the play. And then there's a touchdown to Jason Witten, which is then negated. And, of course, they missed the field goal. Ed, is the reason Jason Garrett doesn't challenge this play because he's just seen that over and over and over again that this thing, it does no good. It does no good to challenge, because I still don't know if that's a good enough reason not to do it, though, because it's an enormous play.
Because, I mean, he's been conscious of this and aware of it and watching it from its very evolution, this new rule about coaches being able to challenge pass interference, whether it's called or not, since training camp he talked about it. And he could already see then that the league was basically putting it in place only to correct a catastrophic miss like there was in the Rams-Saints championship game that might have allowed the wrong team to go to the Super Bowl in the opinion of many. And that's not what this was. We just saw a very obvious call in the game on Thursday night, the Patriots and Giants game. That was challenged by Pat Shurmur, and that call didn't go their way. There's no way they were going to change that call. I think it's been one of the last 21 challenges of pass interference has been reversed. So he would have just been wasting a timeout in all likelihood, and the result was going to be the same. The challenge was going to be denied, and the call on the field upheld. That's what the league is doing. So I don't blame him for that, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And I think you could argue that Wilson – there definitely was contact involving Wilson, who initiated it. You know, certainly fair to question that. But no question, he made contact with two defenders. But I just think it was pointless. And Garrett was smart enough to know it and didn't react on emotion, which is classic Garrett.
Yeah, you're right. The bloodless Garrett. I would have challenged it. And maybe I do act on emotion too much. But I think at some point the league put this in for some sort of reason. I mean, everybody thought it was a bad call, like immediately. I thought Romo, when he saw the replay, said, okay, bad call. Sterator later says, yeah, I think that's a bad call. I mean, at some point, somebody in that booth, and people are about to run this Riveron, or whatever we call him, Al Riveron, they're about to run him out of the business. I mean, really, the league is kind of embarrassing. On that last Cowboys touchdown drive before the ill-fated two-point play, which we'll talk about in a minute, how many flags did you see? I mean,
six plays in a row
with penalties. Yeah. And if you see penalties, you got to call them. But it's really the officiating in this league has been embarrassing early in this season.
My bigger criticism of Garrett, maybe more broadly, eventually the coaching staff as a whole, was when it's 7-3 and you're without the people that they were without, you got to recognize it's going to be hard to score, especially against a Jets defense with Greg Williams. It blitzes as much as it does. You know, your quarterback's going to get hit a lot in this game. You don't want to expose him unnecessarily. And you don't pass up points when you have a chance, figuring it's going to be a close, low-scoring game. And to not kick the field goal at 7-3, to me, was Garrett not recognizing the kind of game he was in. And, you know, the Cowboys have adopted this approach where they fall hopelessly behind in the first half. I think they've been outscored like, 38-6 in the first half of the last two games?
Yeah.
I mean, and you're missing your left tackle in one game, both your tackles in the other game, your best receiver's out. So you're doing nothing but encouraging people to rush your quarterback in a situation where you can't protect him very well. And so I think the Cowboys brought a lot of unnecessary punishment Dak Prescott's way, and a lot of it was because Jason Garrett didn't recognize the kind of game he was in from the start.
It didn't seem like it. Ed, let's talk about that play. It's 4th and 2, and they set up by a 3rd and 1 play where they ran Elliott up the middle, and he gets stopped for yard loss by Quinnen Williams. Now, my gosh, some of that was maybe on that rookie right tackle, but Quinnen Williams also beat up. I watched him beat up Zach Martin some. I know Zach Martin's a great player, but my goodness, I saw a couple times Quinnen Williams just beat him back toward Dak, and we'll talk about it. I mean, this quarterback took an immense amount of punishment. You know, they're like, well, it was a high throw. Well, he was getting, I mean, didn't that seem like an old school NFL? You know, now they protect the quarterbacks like crazy, and maybe it's guys.
Yeah, you
that
know what? I can tell you this: that talking to people after the game, there were some Cowboys coaches who were none too pleased with the fact the officiating crew, in their opinion, failed to protect the quarterback in the way that the rules allow them to protect the quarterback. And that Dak Prescott took a lot of unnecessary late hits and hits to the head, and obviously he actually, after one series, was evaluated for a possible concussion early in the game. He obviously cleared the protocol and was allowed to return to the game, but he was brutalized in this game, and that's what you expect from Greg Williams. I think the Jets came into the game having, you know, blitzed the third most highest percentage of the time in the entire league, and when you put him in a situation where you don't have a wide receiver in Amari Cooper who can make him pay down the field, and you don't have your two starting tackles, I mean, that's what you're going to get out of Greg Williams, and that's what they got on the two-point play when they tried to tie the game at the end, a zero blitz.
Yeah, and the Cowboys, I mean, literally, they were just hoping for another penalty. That's the only thing. That's the only hope they had on that play. Do a zero blitz. They don't get him. 33, Jamal Adams comes up the middle and just, you know, Dak didn't even. I mean, think about that. Ed, I mean, think about it. Your whole game comes down to one play, and that's what you're able to get off. You're able to say, and people today, I heard some of the post-game shows, you got to have a two-point play ready. You got to be. And there was somebody trying to say, well, the Cowboys, oh, it was bad, Ed. Somebody was saying, well, the Cowboys really haven't had an opportunity to work on their two-point plays in a game this year. Come on. Come on. Don't say that. Don't be throwing that stuff out there.
Anyway,
exactly.
You always have a ready list.
You have it ready, and I thought that was interesting. Did you hear Romo say, well, they may have just used their two-point play to score the touchdown. So Dak goes in, and it's time for the two-point play. And then on the two-point play, literally, and again, we have to give the guy credit. He brought the zero blitz and whatever. I mean, that's great. That was it. They dialed it up, and the Cowboys were not ready for it. But you got to – I mean, the whole game is hanging on this one play, and you didn't even get to put a competitive play out there. You literally, your quarterback was under so much duress that they didn't have anything ready for it. Now, is that their fault, Ed, for having an empty backfield? I mean, Zeke, I think, was spread out. I think I saw him out there on the left. I mean, and Zeke went and ran a route where Zeke's a good route runner. I mean, my gosh, he can get downfield. But when you put him up there on the 2-yard line, or you're going for two, I mean, you're going to just, what, are you going to pick it? You're going to have him run a play and just kind of post up in the end zone? I mean, he
my
just kind of turned around.
When you have a dual threat quarterback in a situation like that, you want to threaten the defense with both of those aspects of the quarterback's game and get him out on the edge. You don't just do a quick drop and throw. And I think he had 1.7 seconds before Adams hit him, so there was no chance whatsoever. They blew the play up from the very beginning.
Well, and then on that 4th-and-2 play you talked about, Quinnen Williams came from the opposite side of the field, ran that play down, and Dak, they tried basically a quarterback power play, and you did try to use your quarterback's feet, and it had zero chance. I mean, it was like there weren't enough blockers over there. And they
but that was just a run to the inside. I'm not talking about essentially a fullback dive. I'm talking about get your quarterback rolling out and try, you know, give him a run pass.
On the 2-point play, yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm sorry, I was going back to the earlier 4th-and-2 you were talking about, where that's the best they could come up with was Dak on a 4th-and-2. They didn't work out on 3rd-and-1. And to your point, at that point, if you're just saying,
kick
the field goal, make it 7-6. Maybe they knew that Maher later would kick a 62-yard field goal. This guy is still not to be trusted. I mean, he's obviously got a huge leg, but then he misses a 40 when they do take the field goal there. I'm already hearing people now saying, well, they should have gone for it then. They should have gone for it. So it's just hard to, I mean, there's a lot of different places to second guess this thing. This guy, and the thing is, how will there be another in-season coaching change? Only if they do quit on him like they quit on Wade Phillips. But, boy, it would be a Jerry. You talk about a come-to-Jesus moment. If Jerry truly believed this was like a Super Bowl roster and he loves his quarterback and all, you talk about a huge message he could send this week. It's just to fire this guy, throw him overboard right now. Now, I don't know. Ed, I know we don't think this is going to happen. Who is your interim coach? Is it Chris Richard? If Jason got thrown overboard during the season, are we convinced that Chris Richard is the head coach or the interim head coach?
Well, I haven't been all that impressed with the way the defense has played lately. I mean, they created one turnover. That was by Jordan Lewis, who was only in the game because they'd lost Byron Jones and Anthony Brown to injuries. But I think it's kind of a pointless endeavor to start citing who we think would be a replacement, because I'm pretty sure it's not going to change. In fact, I texted someone after the game, a Cowboys source, and asked him if this loss to the winless Jets would jeopardize in any immediate way Garrett's job, and the response was swift and emphatic: absolutely not.
Yeah.
And then Jerry Jones after the game said he was disappointed, he didn't think this would happen, but when he was asked about Garrett's future, he said, I'm not even close to those future type considerations. He's only thinking about next week's game against the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, well, it doesn't feel that pointless to me. You're asking about it, so I think we can at least discuss it. Now, Garrett, and we also, you know, you've been around Jerry long enough to know Jerry can quickly change his mind on a flight home or something. But when it comes to the head coach, he's only done it once, and I don't think they've quit on him, although they won't give the guy a high five. I mean, this is...
That's the start of quitting.
That's right.
That's how it starts. That's the kind of behavior that leads eventually to quitting.
Oh, man.
You know what, though? A couple of other things that I thought were interesting. First of all, I thought it took them a long time to get Ezekiel Elliott to be featured in the offense again. And I thought, you know, during the week he made a comment. His carry, he had not had 20 carries in any of the previous three games. And his carries had actually diminished over 3 weeks, from 19 to 18 to 13 last week. And some of it, obviously, circumstance getting down to Green Bay 31-3 and so forth. But it had been made pretty clear, I think, to everyone that the offense under Kellen Moore had been shifted to one that was more based on the quarterback and the improved weapons they had in the passing game, and emphasizing those and establishing those, trying to get quick points with big plays and then get a lead and then let Ezekiel Elliott be the featured performer and trying to close it out. I thought today they finally got back to their identity, which Zeke said they needed to do. He said, hey, we need to find our identity. I think what he was really saying is, I need to be a part of this in a big way. And today obviously was, but this was the first time that he's had 150 total yards from scrimmage and the Cowboys have lost. They had been 12-0 in those games, and it was interesting to me that Prescott really never got much going in the play action passing game because, again, they're playing from behind the whole game, and so they're transformed into a drop back passing team when they want to be a play action passing team and pose the threat of the running game in a way that they really haven't been able to do much the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, and did you see Pollard come running in there? They finally, boy, Pollard. I love what we talk all the time about Pollard. Boy, he's going to be a weapon this year. He gets lost. They don't even think about Pollard. He only went in that game because Zeke got tired. Zeke had like 28 carries at some point. He's like, hey, I need to come out of here. Pollard comes in. Boy, looked like he'd been shot out of a cannon. Did you see that scampering around?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Zeke was back in there like two plays later. So I'm with you. I mean, I think they are trying to – it is just hard to establish any kind of identity when you start like that. And you're suddenly down 21-3 to the Jets, and panic starts to set in. And, it's just an embarrassing type situation. Now, I think, people, again, will point out the Cowboys apologist, and there are people out there that are like this. We don't happen to be one of those podcasts, but hey, left tackle, right tackle, Cooper's gone. These aren't excuses. That's what I
sure.
heard. These are reasons.
It's all fair to point out, but I'll also point out that the 49ers remain undefeated because they went and beat the Rams today, and guess what? They didn't have either one of their starting offensive tackles either. Sean Payton's won four games without Drew Brees. Ron Rivera's won four games with his backup quarterback. Cam Newton hasn't been available. He's won with Kyle Allen. I mean, that's what good coaches do. They figure out a way to win despite adversity like that. You're not going to have all your starters in all likelihood over the course of an entire season, and it's what you do in those other games that makes the difference. And the Cowboys so far haven't even been able to win when they have a full and talented roster, on a consistent basis, let alone when they've had these adversities. And Tyron Smith goes out last week, and this week is, it's a far worse situation. I think Amari Cooper played, what, four snaps?
Yeah, I think it was four snaps, and he was gone. Ed, take care of yourself over there.
Sorry, got a little worked up.
No, I know. It happens. Jerry Jones' exact quote, and you had it pretty much right. You were kind of paraphrasing him. I'm disappointed. I didn't think this would happen. He says after the game tonight, and then says he's not putting this solely on the coaches, problems across the board, and then specifically ask about Garrett's future. He says, quote, I'm not even coming close to those future-type considerations. Let me just say this, Ed. I think we're about another loss or two from getting him closer to those types of considerations. Now, I think, again, if you're going to be optimistic, you go, well, last year they were 3-5. I mean, they got on a roll after
they came back, won the division.
Yeah, did come back to win the division, but
playoff game.
These are really negative signs, though, when you take advantage of the dregs of the NFL, and you thought, hey, we'll get to 4-2 against these really bad teams, and here they are, 3-3.
If they had won today, Matt, all four of their wins would have been against an opponent winless at the time.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? All four.
Now,
yeah.
I think the thing that Jerry likely remembers and fans in their emotional overreactions and to these situations forget that it's a long season. The Cowboys are still tied for the lead in the NFC East, and I don't think they're in a situation where it's clear that anybody's significantly better than they are. I mean, all have weaknesses. The Giants are playing a rookie quarterback, and the Eagles have a horrible secondary that, everybody throws for 300 yards and four touchdowns on, and the Cowboys get their shot at that next week.
Yeah, they do, and it will be interesting to see how they perform. Okay, Ed and I are going to talk defense, get a couple of thoughts out of our system on the defensive side of the ball, but now it is time to talk to our resident scout and coach. His name is Glenn Stretch Smith, joining us from the WFAA studios where he's getting ready to do Dale Hansen's sports special. Dale Hansen, had to be excited to see Ellen at that last game. But let's get right to it, Stretch. This was another bad one. Three straight losses to the winless And this one to the winless Jets, J-E-T-S, Jets. Let me start with this. Do you give them any Any kind of excuse or the understanding that they didn't have the left tackle, they didn't have the right tackle, and they lost Amari Cooper right away? Do you give them any sort of leniency or grace because of that situation?
And they didn't have Randall Cobb, correct?
True.
Yeah, no, I don't give them any grace. No, I'm not giving any grace for going out and playing the way they played, getting out schemed the way they got out schemed to an 0-4 Jets team who got their quarterback back, just got him back off of the couch. He's been on the couch for about 4 weeks with mono. I mean, can't get in the weight room and lift, can't run, can't do anything. And you let him go out there and throw the ball all over the yard on you. Hell no, I'm not giving any grace to him. No.
No grace for the Cowboys. There's a lot of people screaming. Before we get to these grades, we'll hit them quickly, because there'll be some devastating grades passed out by Stretch. And, hey, Stretch saw this defense, this secondary thing coming before anybody else. I want to give you credit for that. A lot of people want to throw this coach overboard. If they lose to the – I know it's not going to happen this week. If they lost badly to the Eagles at home, would there be any thought that you might have an in-season head coaching change, or do you think that happened to Wade and that's really the only time Jerry's going to do something like that?
I mean, I don't know that that helps you. I mean, my initial question to you would be, all right, who are you going to go hire? Are you going to go see if you can get Urban Meyer off the set at Fox? Are you going to go? At this season, are you going to go see if you can get Jeff Fisher to put down I'm sure he's fishing up in Montana somewhere, fly fishing. Are you going to get him? I mean, I just don't know who you get that helps in this situation. So my initial reaction would be no. I saw a team last year that, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, was 3-5 following the trade for Amari Cooper and a Monday night where they lost a miserable affair to the Tennessee Titans. They were 3-5 and came back and won the division at 10-6. At 3-3, I think this loss is as bad as any of them. It's certainly as bad as losing to Tennessee on Monday Night Football here in Dallas or in Arlington last year. But I just don't know that you help yourself at all by going and firing Jason and not knowing what you're going to get. I mean, who are you going to get, and then how are you going to move forward at this point in the season with an offense, oh, by the way, who, you know, obviously you heard Tony Romo finally say it today, Jason's footprints are still all over the offense.
Yeah, he did say that. Some people took it thought he was almost kind of throwing shade at Jason by saying that. I think others would say, well, Tony's pointing out that maybe Kellen's been getting too much attention and that Jason sort of is controlling everything out here. There's a couple of different ways to look at it. Stretch, let's start out with the offense. This is a team that fell behind 21-3. They had to make a 62-yard field goal to even get it to 21-6 at halftime. Jason looked like just kind of he'd seen a ghost as he ran off the field. They finally had just a tad bit of momentum going in there. But what did you make of this quarterback? First of all, he took a ton of punishment. And it obviously led him down the field at the end of the game. You got to kind of admire the courage. But what did you – when you talk about the look at his entire game with this group of wide receivers that he had, they were compromised at that position. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think he played that bad. I really didn't. I think he missed a couple of throws, and I think he was close with the seam route to Jarwin. He overthrew Gallup. But overall, I didn't think he played that bad. Now, you got to remember, I mean, Greg Williams is a heck of a defensive coordinator, and you knew he was going to do two things. He was going to come out and he was going to not let, control the running game, not let the running back beat him, and he was going to get after the quarterback. And that's exactly what he did. Now, again, I'm not giving grace to missing the receiver. Yes, it changes the game when Amari Cooper goes out and you don't have an X and Smith wasn't active. And I mean, I got all that. You don't have that deep threat. But still, when you look at it overall, the quarterback didn't play bad. The offensive line, even having two stand-in tackles in Fleming and Knight, I didn't think they played that bad. The thing that bothers me is schematically what Dallas was doing in the run game. I mean, they were just getting lit up, and that falls directly to. And we've talked about this a million times, Matt. I mean, who are you going to pin it on? You're going to pin it on the first-year offensive line coach. You're going to pin it on the first-year offensive coordinator. You're going to, you know, I think Jason Still is the one that's in charge of this offense, so certainly he deserves some blame. But when you go and you grade each position, I mean, I thought Dak played an okay football game. I mean, I gave it – I'm just looking down the row what I gave him. I gave him a C. I gave the offensive line a C. I gave the tight ends a C. I gave – the receivers a C+, but I gave the running back. I thought the running back ran the football extremely hard. I gave him a B. I thought he blocked okay. Schematically is where they got beat. And so when I think of start grading people, I'm gonna start grading the offensive staff. And you know what? For the first time this year, give them a damn F. Because they got hammered up front. It took them forever to adjust to what. Greg Williams was doing as far as stunting and stemming the defensive linemen, and I think it took them forever to adjust. And the biggest issue I got is it's 4th and 2, and I got no problem with going for it. I mean, I really don't. I don't have a problem with going for it right there. But when you go for it, would you not call the frickin' quarterback power for crying out loud? I mean, you don't have a better play than to run the quarterback power. It's mind-blowing. I mean, had I been in the press box at MetLife and been coaching there, you'd have seen me jump right out. I'd have just done a damn swan dive right out of the press box that I've heard that call.
Oh, the quarterback power. You weren't particularly pleased with that. What about leading up to it? What about you got Elliott for 4 yards, Elliott left tackle 5 yards, Elliott up the middle, Quinnen Williams, who kind of dominated. Yeah. That's a minus. It's 4th and 2. I mean, you're working your man. You're working your running back. I mean, are you what did you – are you wanting to throw in there somewhere?
I would have done anything in the world except run a damn – a single wing quarterback power. I don't even care what the call is. And you don't hear me. I'm really not one of those guys. I don't like criticizing calls. I think that's the easiest thing in the world to do after the fact. You know, you're sitting on the couch eating Cheetos in your beanbag chair, and you want to question a play call. I never question a play call. I don't like questioning a play call. But it is 4th and 2, and you run a damn quarterback power. I mean, that's enough to – I mean, seriously, that's enough to make you think about checking yourself in for a frontal lobotomy down there at Baylor. It's nuts.
Baylor, Scott, and White. You're talking about Baylor, Scott, and White. I don't know if they do.
You go to your church, and I'll go to mine. Baylor, whatever. One of these places down here downtown. Yeah. Down here where I'm at by Young Street. They got about 5 of them, about 4 blocks from here.
Yeah. Let's go over the defense. Defense didn't really hold up its end of the bargain either. And Wousie, the man we call Cheeto, bites on that kind of, you know, little stop and go from Temple. Played for Matt Rhule at Temple. Robbie Anderson put a little stop and go on Cheeto, and Cheeto never caught up. What did you make of the defense? Start with the secondary. You've been very critical of the secondary. Jordan Lewis did make a couple of plays in this game, and you know, a lot of people got injured in this thing. Of course, Heath. Boy, you know, you'd like to have a safety back there trying to prevent some of these plays, but that's not really Heath's strength. You know, he's better in the box.
He's more of a – you're right, Matt. He's more of a line-em-up guy. I did not think that the secondary did not play well. I mean, the interception, quite frankly, was really on Darnold. I mean, he threw the slant behind him, and good that he did make the play. I mean, and that's good, but I'm telling you, this secondary, and we've talked about it all year, I mean, they get PI calls at critical times in the football game, critical times in the game. And, you know, I didn't think they, you know, especially tackled well today. I'm, you know, this secondary, I am really not happy with the secondary play. But, overall, because they did get an interception down there, because they did keep the Cowboys in the game, I mean, that keeps them away from getting an F, and I'm going to give that group a D. But, I mean, it is barely. It is a 69.5, and we're grading it on the curve.
Well, hey, listen, the Wolf Hunter did have 10 tackles. I looked it up. It was Jalen Smith.
Now, the linebackers, yep. Yeah, the linebackers, Matt, played well. I mean, I thought Jalen Smith played well. I saw some things out of Sean Lee. I mean, I thought the linebackers did a nice job of containing Le'Veon Bell, filling the gaps. I mean, they really made some really nice plays in short yardage situations. I thought they played well. I thought Quinn played well. But I'm concerned, guys, about – I mean, I'm not – Lawrence is not showing up on film, even with Quinn in there. Crawford is not doing much. And then we got a bunch of lunchbox guys down inside. Malik Collins, terrible call down there to grab the guy on the horse collar that Darnold in the horse collar when you knew he wasn't going to make the first down in that situation. That cost him. I gave that group a C just because of Quinn. I gave the linebackers a B because they did a nice job filling the gaps. Again, playing where they had not done a great job a week ago against Green Bay, filling the gaps. They corrected that and did a nice job this week of playing gap assignment football. But I'm gonna go right to Rashard. I mean, I did not like the defensive game plan. I did not like what they did as far as the coverage, what they were doing from a coverage standpoint. I mean, to let a guy again go from a month of doing nothing to throwing it around the yard and looking like Johnny Unitas. I mean, I'm gonna combine what I gave some of the guys on the offensive staff with an F, and I'm giving the defensive staff an F. Give them an F because they did not do a good job of having this football team ready to play.
Oh man, F's all around. I tell you, one of the greatest comebacks from mono. Boy, a lot of people I remember in junior high and high school were felled by mono. But Darnold came back strong, came out firing, and I can't wait to get back to training camp next year, see Chris Rashard with that cap turned around backwards, out there sprinting around in cleats. Love watching that. So anyway.
Yeah, I mean, all that sounds good, except his guys aren't playing worth the whiskey crap right now. So, I don't know if that does you any good.
Yeah.
Dabbing it up and wrapping your ankles or spatting yourself or putting on your damn kangaroo shoes, who gives a rip?
Love some good spats. Hey, listen, good stuff from you. You've got a lot of energy. Save some of that for the TV tonight. It is Glenn Stretch Smith on with Dell Hansen, and they'll be talking about some of social justice here in the Dallas area.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get my moral compass going. Thanks for reminding me, Matt. I appreciate
right.
that tonight.
Oh, he's got his Italian loafers on. He'll be ready to go. Stretch, good stuff. Okay, tell everybody hi. Tell Mike Leslie I said hi. God, guy has good hair.
Hey, Matt, sorry to bother you tonight, pal, and tell Frito the same. Didn't mean to bother him either.
Okay.
Sorry to bother you, too.
All right. There, just hung up on us. There he was. Glenn Stretch Smith, very upset tonight. F to the offensive staff, F to the defensive staff for their play calling. He got going pretty quickly there with the grades. Lots of D's, C's, F's. I want to say this about my bookie. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to my bookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you are betting is just as important as who you are betting on. It is. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with my bookie, which kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot. Try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter what, the NFL season is the best time of year for all of this. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Wow. Use the promo code Doomsday, Doomsday, to activate the offer. That's promo code Doomsday, Doomsday. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, it is time to get back into some defensive talk with Ed Werder, who is coming to us from Green Bay. So much history out there, and he just wanted to go be around just a Hall of Fame quarterback. That's the only thing. Ed, for years, was around Brett Favre. I would say, Ed, is it safe to say you haven't become quite as close to Aaron as you were to Brett? There's still time.
I don't know anybody who was associated with Brett Favre who has become enormously popular with Aaron Rodgers.
You think it's just...
I think it's one or the other. It's like the Jerry Jimmy thing.
Oh,
you're
gotcha.
One or the other.
Yeah.
You cannot be aligned with both.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's that
and
is... That is
I, a... I've never... I mean, I don't think I've ever said anything bad about Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I mean, what is there really to say about the way he plays? And, you know, but I think his perception was that at a difficult time for him personally, that I was working on Favre's behalf to deny him his rightful place as the Packers' starting quarterback, when my perception is, the correct one, by the way, that I was objectively handling it, but I was in and around Favre.
Yeah.
I was reporting on Favre. Two other ESPN people were up here in Green Bay at the time,
yeah,
reporting on Aaron Rodgers in the Packers' front office. So
mm-hmm.
He didn't deem it to be all that fair, but he and I have gotten along okay since then. But yeah,
you guys
closer
are
closer to Favre than Aaron Rodgers.
I would point out that Favre at times requested certain suits for you to wear, so we'll just leave that alone from there. Okay, as we move on to the defense and how the defense played, I mean, a lot of this is going to be on Garrett. Kellen Moore takes a little bit on this, but Chris Richard, as you said, let's not act like in these times of great stress for this team, the defense has come riding to the rescue. Although, boy, your guy, Robert Quinn, I love a good, when it's like 21-6 or whatever it was, love a good horse and carriage celebration, whatever that thing is, ride the horse type deal. And he was doing that. He did get a sack, got a sack early, and then got a sack late. But for the most part, Sam Darnold, who's had the mono, really had mono, I think, in that first game. We just didn't know it until after that, has been out. Jets have been in a bad, bad way. And then suddenly, with a competent quarterback, the Robbie Andersons of the world look pretty good. Jamison Crowder, who we remember from his Redskin days. But, Ed, that change of possession where they go on that 92-yard touchdown throw, that's Awuzie's work. That's our man Cheeto out there, and he kind of bites, and then he slips, and there's Robbie Anderson, undrafted.
And then Jeff Heath is the last, last defender. That's never going to work out.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, to me, that was the pivotal moment in the game until the very end. You know, that came one play after Garrett turned down the field goal and tried to score the touchdown, and Dak was stuffed on the next play. Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson connect for the longest touchdown play in the league this year, 92 yards. So that completely flipped the game by 10 points right there.
Yeah.
And just generally, I mean, yeah, Quinn had a couple sacks, but, you know, we didn't see anything from DeMarcus Lawrence. We didn't see Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith making any kind of big plays, big emotional game-changing plays. You know, Jordan Lewis did it, as we mentioned earlier. And he was only in the game despite his apparent ball-hawking skills, because the Cowboys don't want that. They've got two interceptions now on the season, and he has one of them. But they weren't able to do much of anything with that either. So I haven't really been that impressed with this defense when you consider the advantages that they've had. A quarterback who hadn't played since week one today. Devontae Adams out of the game for Green Bay last week. They let Aaron Jones be the all-time touchdown scorer among opponents in Cowboys history, and they lose to Teddy Bridgewater. And that was more the offense's fault, but the defense has failed to do anything to sort of support the team and create a winning opportunity for them as the offense has struggled in the way that we've already described.
Yeah, and Lewis, in there, he made a play with his head. That was a poor throw by Darnold. He was mad at himself. Darnold actually played pretty well, except when they started bragging on him like crazies when he made that errant throw that Lewis got down there. And Jalen Smith, boy, it's good that he got that contract extension when he did. There's been a little bit of a disappearing act from him. Looking at some of these stats, Jalen Smith finishes with three tackles. I do not remember much. I do remember on some of those running plays, a cutback by Le'Veon Bell, him getting caught in some of that trash in there. Malik Collins had to leave that game, but did come back in the game, finishes with one tackle. The return of Antoine Woods, I don't think that necessarily did a huge thing for the team. And to your point, DeMarcus Lawrence ends up with two tackles, but, I mean, I just let's see. Did he have any hurries? No. Did he have any knockdowns?
Knockdown.
No.
And remember, the Jets came into the game, and you can't judge the Jets team today by the previous standards because they played started three different quarterbacks when Darnold was gone. But, you know, they were the 32-ranked offense in the NFL. He looked nothing like it today. Darnold made a huge difference with his, you know, quick decision-making, getting it out of his hands quickly. But, you know, everybody thought, geez, this offensive line's horrible. Philly sacked the quarterback, you know, 10 times last week and scored two defensive touchdowns against the Jets, again, without Darnold. But does one quarterback make that much difference?
I mean, you wouldn't think so, but boy, the way watching that broadcast, Darnold was the second coming, but he really shouldn't have. And plus, that you remember that one time Quinn had that second sack, number 72 just didn't even know who to block. I mean, their
right,
left tackle Shell, yeah. I think is his name, didn't know where to go. Just I think I'll double team this inside guy, and I'll just let Robert Quinn, you know, come untouched. So, literally, you know, the big plays were made on just obvious mistakes. Sean Lee ran around. I mean, Leighton Vander Esch, shockingly to me, did have 10 tackles. I just have a hard time remembering some of that, but did have 10 tackles. So I thought the Jets just outplayed them. Cowboys finally fought their way back in that game. But I never had a great feeling about that they were going to have some kind of a really good two-point play. I mean, even when they came back and they were excited and they fought their way all the way back in that game, and of course they could have changed the entire narrative and the storyline this week with it. It would have been all about, oh, they fought back and they sent the game to overtime. They somehow won, and they literally couldn't get a pass off on a two-point play.
Yep.
I mean, I don't care if it's zero blitz. Greg Williams, I mean, are we shocked that Greg Williams, I mean, you used to cover the Saints during the whole Bounty years. You have to affect the quarterback. You have to. I mean, that's what he used to say over and over.
He's a descendant philosophically of Buddy Ryan, the old Eagles defensive coordinator, who believed in and these words have come out of Greg Williams' mouth too. You got to cut the head off the snake, and the head of the snake is the quarterback. And he made it clear today that was going to be his approach. I think everybody knew that was going to be his approach with the Cowboys in the situation. On the offensive line that they were, and certainly they got a lot of shots in on Dak Prescott, and the Cowboys are fortunate their quarterback didn't get hurt at any point in the game.
Yeah, they are, and those were aggressive, and like you say, the Cowboys, nobody wants to hear it right now, but Ed Werder reporting that some of the Cowboys coaches did not think this quarterback was protected as much as he could have been under the rules. And, you know, one thing they're trying to outlaw is when you put your full body weight on a guy. I saw that a couple times. And then you actually saw him just kind of pick him up after the ball had already been released and just sling him down. Like, I saw that a couple of times.
Helmet to the chest on the last drive, you know, the crown of the helmet and the sternum.
Yeah.
So
I think sometimes they do. I think we've seen evidence where they sort of guys like Cam and he's complained over the years, and Dak, people that are athletic and can move or are known for being able to run, sometimes don't get the protection that maybe some other quarterbacks that are more, you know, pocket passers would be afforded. But that's for another day. I don't think that's what cost the Cowboys the game. But this is a this is going to be a rough week, as Tony pointed out. Nance. It's going to be a tough week for Dallas in Dallas for this team, this coach, and everybody. What do you see? Is this going to be one of those teams that they'll circle the wagons? Everybody's after us now. We got the Eagles. We're still okay. It's 3-3. How do you see this team being able to react? Because obviously, if they got Collins and Smith back, they would look a little different. But it's in terms of could they find their DNA a little bit? Could they find their identity? They tried a little bit. They tried to go back to the old running attack and leaning on Zeke. I mean, where do you see this thing headed?
I think that's what they have to do, because this, like I said, was a very uncharacteristic loss for this team. And, you know, they got a 3-game losing streak, and they've lost two of the games by 2 points. The other one was, the Packer game was 8 points, 10 points. Can't remember what it was now, but,
10.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to them, obviously, you know, like every other team, when they're in crisis mode, they talk about how close they are and how they have the right kind of people and the right men and the brotherhood, and they're going to lean on each other. Well, they should have gotten there before now. Like, if they really had that, I think we would have already seen that. The thing I think that, and like I said, uncharacteristic loss. First time Zeke's had 150 scrimmage yards and they've lost. Usually when they don't turn the ball over, they win. Dak was 29-5 when he didn't throw an interception. Now he's, you know, 29-6. But I think that what we did see that's encouraging was, again, they did try to win the game at the end, and they nearly were successful pulling it out. But I think you just saw the toughness and the physicality of Dak and Zeke. And to me, that's what you have to have at those two positions. And I thought they demonstrated that in remarkably difficult circumstances again today. And so if you're going to have faith in anything, I think it's that quality.
Can you fire Paul Alexander again?
No, you can't fire Hudson Howe because he left on his own again.
All right. That's how they kind of turned it around last year.
But, hey, hey, you are what your record says you are, as Parcells said. And, you know, talking to a coach after the game, hey, you know, it's the NFL. Nobody cares how it happened. Nobody cares about the why, you know.
Yeah.
You either win or you lose. And for 3 weeks in a row, the Cowboys have lost. So right now that's who they are. They're fortunate the Eagles didn't run away with the division on them. But they need to get themselves in order and play a good game and win at home next week against a division rival.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that Romo was very bullish on this offense has Jason Garrett's handprints, footprints, whatever he said.
Footprints. I think he said meant to say fingerprints.
I know, but all over it. And then that caused, Dez kind of did one of those LOL sort of low-key shade from Romo type tweet. And then he came back and criticized Garrett some more, and obviously he's been on it. But I like this, Ed. In the first three games, it's Kellen Moore's offense. And now folks are trying to give this thing back to Jason Garrett. This is now Jason – it's more Jason Garrett's than Kellen Moore.
What was do me a favor, look at the time of possession in the game today. Tell me what it was today, if you can find it real quick on the team stats.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting, to buy you some time while you do that, one of the interesting things I noticed this week as I was putting together my notes pre-game was that the evolution of the offense. Obviously, as Dak Prescott gains more experience, the Cowboys collect Amari Cooper and Randall Cobb, and you know Michael Gallup progresses in his career in year two. You know they're going to evolve toward being more pass oriented, yeah. And whether that's a good direction for this team to go or not, I'm not sure, because they started having success when Jason Garrett decided under Romo we need to balance this up. We need to have a running game. They use three straight first round picks on offensive linemen, and then drafted Ezekiel Elliott fourth overall. And this was the first time that the Cowboys' time of possession had been under 30 minutes. They were at 28:45 going into today's game. First time since Dak and Zeke took their positions in leading this team and this offense that they had been minus in terms of time of possession. They were not a team dominating time of possession, and that forces your defense to play an awful lot of snaps, and they played 36 minutes in the loss to Green Bay. I was curious as to what that number was today.
32:03 for the Cowboys, time of possession, and of course that leaves 27:57 for the New York Jets.
So right. Okay.
They've gone
and
back.
The Jets had a 92-yard touchdown that took 30 seconds, so that's part of it. But okay, interesting to know. Just I want to keep an eye on that going forward. To what degree is Dak becoming the focal point of this offense as opposed to Zeke? We know they can win when they have Zeke as the focal point of the offense. They haven't been able to go all the way, haven't been to a championship game. Obviously, it's not the way most teams in the NFL do it, but it was the way the Cowboys were built. But then when you fire Scott Linehan as offensive coordinator, if you're the next guy, you don't want it to look anything like that. That got the last guy fired.
Yeah.
And so maybe Kellen Moore has made a conscious effort. Maybe, you know, Garrett and Kitna have all been involved in that too, pushing it more in the direction of the quarterback.
All right, and something you'll like as well, Ed, that's being talked about and discussed, especially right here on Doomsday, 17 plays, 50 yards. Those were first downs. On first downs, they had 17 runs, I should say, on first down, 17 runs, 50 yards, and they had a total of 26 first downs, 7 by rush, 15 by pass.
Yeah, well, when you, I mean,
all those by penalty as well.
That can all get skewed. First of all, I would have taken the approach that I want to run the football against the Jets because I know that's what Cam Fleming does best. I don't want him pass protecting if I don't have, you know, Tyron Smith. And now I don't have either tackle, so I want to run the football with my best player as much as I can. But then they get behind 21-3, and then just like Green Bay, you don't really have much of a choice. You've lost control of the game from a play-calling point of view. And so a lot of the numbers wind up getting skewed that way, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they just one thing this guy loves to do, Kellen, he loves a good first down run. And so we don't have to skew anything there. The man is committed to that, and he's really fallen in love with it over the last couple of weeks. Ed, good work from Green Bay. Have a great day. What time does your broadcast day start on Monday, on a Monday night game?
Not until after the game, so I've got some time here.
Whoa, Ed.
But I've already been. I know I'm assigned the Eagles Cowboys game next week, and I'm sure I'll be out there during the week because the it's crisis. Cowboys in crisis
is
the storyline for the week.
Nobody.
We thought we'd have done that last week.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the Cowboys lost a game, so we can make up for it this week.
Okay. Well, I'll see you out there and appreciate everything. It is Ed Werder, as always, on the Doomsday podcast coming to us. From Green Bay, where he's getting ready for a little Monday night football. And the excitement in the air there. Ed, thank you, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
There he goes, Ed Werder. All right, and boy, just a busy, busy night. Cowboys lose. People want Jason Garrett thrown overboard. This season screams of a head coaching change. And if it continues this way, it is going to happen. Could it happen in season? Well, really have to get away from them. Jerry says tonight, telling reporters he's just not even close to thinking about that. A horrible loss at home or a big-time destructive loss to the Eagles would do it. But, of course, as Ed reminded us, they were 3-5 last season. Maybe there's still hope even if they lost to the Eagles. But, boy, in the aftermath of a 24-22 loss to the hapless New York Jets, there is no there's no joy in Mudville. And what you know, all those Cowboys fans show up in the Meadowlands. I mean, it was like 50%. Even Sam Darnold noted it, the man with mono, after the game, and it was a very, very sad time for the Cowboys as they send all those fans home. There were people from Dallas who made that trip, and what an embarrassment for the Cowboys to do that. We will be back with you next Sunday night as we react to the Cowboys and Eagles live from AT&T Stadium. Thanks for everyone who's been a part of this. Mark Frito Friedman, of course, at Frito Nation Productions, Ed Werder, Glenn Stretch Smith, Ross Hudson, great guest in with us tonight, observing things and providing some great information. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Good night, everybody.
Shining, stockings have been hung. You're praying for your daughter, lighting candles for your son. They're living in the city now, you don't see them anymore. This year will not be like the ones before. And the streets are all but empty, the bars have all shut down, and it's hard to find a friend inside this godforsaken town. That emptiness, it feels from your head down to your toes. I'm sorry, baby, that's just the way it goes.